it's very weird approaching a record with nobody telling me no. And that could have been quite a terrible thing. But luckily, I'm a good sort of disciplinarian of myself, I think. And it was cool. I just gave into the process. Like, the best advice I got was just like, takes as long as it takes, or it takes as little time as it takes, and just go, you know, do what feels right. And that's what I've done. And I'm really excited now.
Hello, and welcome to episode 30 of Attention Engineer. I'm Laura Kidd, a music producer, songwriter, and solo artist making music as Penfriend and beaming into your ears from my studio, The Launchpad, in Bristol. You can find me around the internet at Penfriend Rocks. Thanks for joining me today as I continue my mission to encourage creativity in every listener by sharing conversations with some of the artists I admire the most. Welcome to the podcast, and thank you for tuning in. In a world absolutely full of stuff, it makes me very happy that you somehow found your way here, however you did. How did you, by the way? I'd love to know. Do come and say hi on one of those social media platforms sometime and tell me. Some days I find it hard to know what to talk about in this part of the podcast. The days are sort of blending into each other at the moment, so I'm always very glad of these regular deadlines, and I'm happy to share whatever's going on, but I'm well aware these are challenging times for all of us, and I think I've been second-guessing myself a bit too much and deciding not to say anything recently, which is a bit silly. So, hello, how are you? I'm all right. Just doing my best to keep things on a relatively even keel and sometimes succeeding. I'm missing people and activities and going places. You know, you do know. I've been working hard on lots of things to do with getting my new record ready to fly out into the world. So I just spent 7 full days editing the video for my new song Exotic Monsters, which involved learning lots of fun new editing techniques after watching many YouTube tutorials on how to light a green screen to best effect. I'm pleased and relieved to say it all worked out really well, and it's the strangest music video I've made so far, and that's saying something. I'm having a lot of fun making videos again after a bit of time away from it, so I'm looking forward to making more soon. Do keep an eye out for this one. It should be popping up on YouTube within the next week, so hop over there and subscribe to my channel to be one of the very first to see it. Before I introduce you to our brilliant guest, I'd like to say a massive thank you to Angie Stallings from my Correspondence Club for sponsoring today's episode. Thank you. Angie asked me to give a shout out to her son's curiosity and collectibles shop in Florida, so if you're in the area, make sure you visit Jekyll's Basement in Vero Beach. And if you're not in the area, check them out on Instagram at Jekyll's Basement for lots of fun curios. The Correspondence Club is the motor behind my music and podcast making, so a warm welcome and big thanks to any members who are listening today. Rebecca Lucy Taylor is a true auteur, a musician, vocalist, songwriter, and dancer with an all-encompassing vision that she channels into her solo project, Self-Esteem. After releasing 4 critically acclaimed albums and touring the world with previous band Slow Club, Rebecca released her debut solo album Compliments Please in 2019 and was nominated for Best Breakthrough Act at the Q Awards that year. In this conversation, we discuss how becoming a solo artist and making exactly the work she wanted drastically changed Rebecca's mental health, how dancing brought her back to her body, bridging the gap between Slow Club and self-esteem and bringing her lots of joy. Becoming a badge entrepreneur, how designing badges and fulfilling her own merch during lockdown has helped Rebecca feel useful, despite having the handwriting of a little naughty boy. We also talked about the pros and cons of relentless touring and how that changes as you grow older and, hopefully, wiser. Plus, leaving no surface unstatemented, how Rebecca's making up for lost time after years of not being able to say what she meant. Here we go. Yeah, so where are you at the moment?
I am in Rotherham, sort of between Rotherham and Sheffield, in my parents' house, which I've spent most of 2020 in, which has been, like, weirdly incredible, but also it's about 4 months too many now.
Yeah, I think adults living in houses together is challenging at the best of times. So, yeah.
We've done pretty well in terms of getting on, and they're really good at sort of leaving me alone. And it's been quite nice to, I think what I do for a living has always been perplexing. And I think that them seeing how much I actually work like a job, I think has been good for us all. They do get it. They get what I'm doing, but I don't think they've ever quite understood how much, certainly self-esteem is like more than music. So I'm,
yeah,
it's been cool. It's been cool. But I am very ready to go and be an adult in the world, because I can feel myself regressing. I'm like weird anxiety I had as a teenage girl. Like it's not back, but it's like, hey girl. And I'm like, no, how dare you? And we need to get out of here. But you know, I'm lucky I've had somewhere to come to spend the pandemic, so I'm grateful.
Yeah, of course. Well, we should probably give you a moment to introduce yourself to the people who are listening.
Who's this bitch?
Who and what are you?
Great question. I ask myself every morning. I don't know, really. I'm a musician, and I was in a band, and now I'm a solo artist.
Yes.
My name is Rebecca Lucy Taylor, and my solo artist name is Self Esteem, and my band was called Slow Club.
What do you think of yourself as? Are there any words that you like others to use to describe you if they're describing you?
Well, I keep doing this joke where I say, oh, it's very hard to be an auteur.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm an auteur, let's say that. Depends. Like, realistically, I think I'm just an artist, really. Like, it's multi-layered and creative, like, layers, different layers of creativity. And I'm a musician, I guess you could call me a musician. But
yeah. I always like to ask this because people have such different reasons for using or not using different words.
Yeah.
Like, I hate singer-songwriter. I hate it.
Yeah.
I hate it so much.
Me too.
Because of what it says in my head, what a singer-songwriter is. But of course, the intention of someone else maybe calling me that is not to say, and it's shit.
Yeah.
It's just to say, this is what I think this thing is, you know?
Yeah.
And I try to be very much not that. So I love the word auteur. I love that.
Yeah.
I didn't know we were allowed to call ourselves that, but if you're saying it's okay, I'm going to start using that word as well. Because that's
go
what
for
I,
it. I it's think that's, true.
Yeah. Let's just embrace that.
Definitely. Like, no one's doing what you're doing. No one's having the ideas you're having. You're an auteur.
Yeah. Brilliant. Oh, this is a great day. Somehow, during a pandemic, you have just finished making the second Self-Esteem album, haven't you?
Yes. Oh my God, I just got goosebumps then when I thought about that. How cool.
Good.
Is that? Wow.
That's really cool.
Yes.
Without giving too much away, because I don't really love giving too much away about my records before they're out, but is there anything you can tell us about that?
Yeah, I mean, after the first record, it was sort of like, worked really hard on touring and stuff like that, and then that started to wind down, and I already knew, had a real vision for what I wanted for the next one. And I went and sort of I've tried a few different things, like going in with songwriters and all this sort of pop way of doing things, and none of it felt good. And so it was just yet another example of like, I knew what to do in the first place, so just go and do it. But I tried to do what everyone else does first. And then, so then I went back in with Johan, who I made the first one with, and we just started really strong. And so it was already like there was about 10 demos before the pandemic hit, and then sort of did the first lockers, just listening to them, plotting what I wanted to do with them. So as soon as there was a gap in terms of being able to travel and work, I went and just bashed it out.
Yeah, brilliant. It's because sometimes it's good to have limitations. I think often it's good to have limitations of time and things.
Yes, it is. And it's been a very strange, obviously very strange process to go, like, all those years making records with somebody else, and then the first one was like, you know, 10 years of pent up kind of stuff, and then the second one I was like, it's very weird approaching a record with nobody telling me no, and that could have been quite a terrible thing. But luckily I'm a good sort of disciplinarian of myself, I think, and It was cool. I just gave into the process. Like, best advice I got was just like, takes as long as it takes, or it takes as little time as it takes, and just go, you know, do what feels right. And that's what I've done. And I'm really excited now, like, finally feel good about it. And I'm ready to, you know, not be in my childhood bedroom talking about it. I want to be like doing it.
Yes, of course. Well, when your way of doing it is so all encompassing. There's dancing, there's brilliant videos, there's cool slogan t-shirts that I wanted to ask about that. Are the things that you write on the t-shirts things you need to remind yourself of, or are they messages for people looking?
It's a mix. I don't overthink it. Like, I, right. They were getting like mantra-esque. Like, the last one I did was very much, it said, I want someone to fuck me on my period anyway. And it's such a like hardcore t-shirt. And one of the girls in the band was like, I don't want to wear it. And that's the first time that had happened. But I thought, okay, that made me think, what am I doing this for, and who's it for? And that, you know, it was a fuck you. So they can go as extreme as that, and I don't regret that at all. I think it's fucking funny and true. But then they can be about, you know, very global affirmations that,
yeah,
I just think it's just an extension of being able to say what I mean. And then there's such a fucking backlog of not being able to say what I mean that no surface left unstatemented.
Well, and you recently had some success with badges, didn't you?
Oh my God, can you believe? Badge entrepreneur.
I was thinking you could probably put those two words together, like badge, surely badgepreneur.
We've been trying. My friends text me saying Richard Bradgeston, but nah. But, you know, it's hard. It's hard. It's hard to make a name for yourself when you're such a successful badge seller, but...
I can't let the badges get in the way of the records, you know.
I know. I just spoke to my press guy. We've not touched base yet about this next record, and he's Lily Allen's guy, and she obviously did the Vibrators. I don't know if you saw.
Yes.
Which is something I've always really, really wanted to do, obviously. And I was like, is it works though? Like, has it done what it set out to do? And he was like, yeah. So much press about the Vibrators, so much more than you'll get about your music. And I'm like, oh, that's so true. The badges.
So annoying.
It's all going to be about the badges next year, I'm telling you now. I don't know. It's, for me, it's just been about surviving this year. And survival for me is keeping busy and occupied in my own mind. So the merch is something I love doing anyway. I love designing stuff. And quite honestly, like, I cannot get enough of, like, I put the Arctic Monkeys on, and I whole discography, and I write labels and pack them and post them. And this sort of, it's the first time in my life I've had a real tangible, like, you know, I spend the money to make the products, the money comes in and I send them off, and at the end of the day I'm fucking tired from packaging and postaging, and it feels amazing. So the only reason I'm trying so hard is obviously I need to find a way to earn money this year from the money I've lost from not being able to play live, but also I genuinely love it. Like, my friend Gareth, who makes his band sell a lot of merch, and he's got a really amazing spreadsheet of how to print people's addresses on sticky labels, and he sent it to me, and he was like, this is how you do it. And like, really kind, really helpful. And I'm like, yeah, but I just love the monotony and how long it fucking takes to write everyone's addresses.
Oh, you write them out?
Yeah,
that's lovely
it.
Though.
Yeah, I love
that's so
it.
Nice. So people get to have a really nicely written out thing that's from you. I love that.
Well, nicely is pushing it, because I have the handwriting of a little naughty boy, but yeah, it's I love it. So thank you. There's a public thank you to my badge followers.
Yay.
Because you've given me something to do.
This is it. I fulfill all my own merch at the moment, and I really enjoy that, because you're right, it does feel like a job. It feels like a job that a proper person would do. And then when it's done, it's done. As opposed to everything else, which is never ending in a wonderful way, but like, there's no end.
Exactly.
So I've been trying to put boundaries in place, especially this year, because I've just worked more and more and more. Because there's nothing else to do. I can't go anywhere, can't see anyone and all that. So I've been finding that quite hard. Are you good at boundaries and like stopping working and giving yourself time off and stuff?
Yeah, great question. No, but
everyone I ask says no.
Yeah, it's definitely like a fucking buzzword for me these days, where I'm like, right, in every facet of life, I don't have them. And I now I can see the why they're a good thing to have. But self-esteem, I can have the idea, I can know what it's going to take to get there, I can work hard to get there, and then I can put it to bed. Whereas when I was in a band with other people, there were so many variables and so many people changing their mind, and that was a lot more stressful. And I would, you know, take that 24/7 with me rather than now. I, because I'm the boss, I know when the job's done and no one can fuck with it again. So boundaries are getting there, but I love working. Like, I have me and my Galps, who plays in my band, and Mike, we all say work's more fun than fun. But you can only say that if what you do is a fun thing, which, you know, ultimately when it's good, being a musician is the best job in the world. So
yeah, well, I love what I do as well, and that's why I find it really hard to go, I'm sort of like, what is time off then? Because I really love this.
Yeah.
But I know I need to not be sitting at a computer all the time. So sometimes I sit on the sofa with a computer.
Have you, is it been weird not playing shows this year? Have you found that?
I was getting sick of them because I have found them very difficult and challenging because of playing lots and lots of support slots where the audience aren't necessarily going to like me. Mm-hmm. They don't dislike me, but like if you're driving from Bristol to Manchester for £50 fee, and the audience aren't into it and they don't buy anything off you afterwards and like join your community online, it feels like that's a waste of time.
Yeah,
and I should probably just not do that and just play to people who already like me, you know. So I was gonna dial it way back anyway.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, Slow Club, we did years of that and years, and it was really like when I came to be doing self-esteem, I said, I can't, I'm up for it, but I don't want to play to the wrong, you know, people that you, like you're saying, like you're just not going to win them over.
Yeah.
Playing live is, you know, not only the traveling and everything, but it's actually quite, it takes a lot from you if you really go there in your performance, which I'm sure you do. So yeah, you're right. That's a good boundary to have set because...
Yes,
but it's hard, isn't it? You're always like, is one person, you know, worth it?
Yeah.
And they are, so.
They are. If we could sort of beam in some way, just appear, that'd be great. I find it hard to talk about this stuff in public or relative public on this, for instance, because I don't want to sound like I'm an arrogant person and I think that everybody should just like give me all their attention all the time, because I like winning over a room and I'm really good at that. I won't win over the whole room, but I am good at that. I've had a lot of practice. So I know I can do that if people actually will listen, but sometimes they're just not into it. They don't want to find someone new that night.
Yeah.
And so it's really hard to know which audiences are going to be great and which aren't. So like you say, you're kind of thinking, well, but this could be the night where, yeah, like you say, one great person gets into you or many more. And so it's really, really hard to choose. So, but I was finding it was grinding me down. And I mean, I've been touring independently with my own music for 10 years, driving myself everywhere and doing all the stuff. Sure. So I think it's fair enough to get to a point where I'm like, maybe just make some more music, because if I'm here I can make more music than if I'm always driving to Manchester.
Yeah,
and I love Manchester, no offense. It's just an example of a faraway place.
Yeah, totally.
So yeah,
every time I get pretty like sort of ground down or disillusioned with it, I try and center back to what I like doing the most, and it's the being able to create it. So yeah, like and you never know, like you might have a sudden desire to go back to. Sometimes I'm like, yeah, give me a room full of nobody listening, I'll fucking show you. But not as much. You're right.
Yeah.
It can fuck you up. Sorry, go on.
I would think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but with the way that you're presenting the self-esteem music, you have to be quite selective about any supports you would do, because it's an unusual setup, isn't it?
Yeah.
Can you explain what the setup is for your live shows?
On a good fee, it's drums, a keyboard and bass, and me and two backing singers that also dance, and we're constantly sort of doing full dance routines. But right when I had a first meeting with my manager who manages self-esteem. I was like, I just don't want to be touring up and down the country anymore. Like, I was really burnt out, and, you know, I want it to be a show that you have to make sure you get a ticket for, because it's not going to be here again for a while. I feel like a bit premature saying that, because then the pandemic happened and I was like, damn it, I really want to just play as much as possible. But it's all just been very kind of like learning, you know, at this time around, you know, support slots. It's definitely something I'd love to do, but I'm only going to do it for like an enormous artist that like it will be worth it. Because it's horrible, actually, that like fucking 50 quid first on thing is such a shame, because you so many people aren't, you like, I definitely like became a good performer from being a support band for a very long time and learning how to be on a stage, but you know, at this age I wouldn't be able to do it for that, and certainly not do the live show I do, because it's quite expensive, because I make sure I'm no one's doing me a favor anymore, like I'm doing all of this like well paid, so it's hard.
Yeah. I think that only really would work for bands who are a full band of people who are equal in their band, and they just want to go and play loads. And that's fine. But that fee hasn't changed for 20 years or 30 years or something, the 50 quid thing.
It's crazy.
It's even longer, actually. There was someone shared a poster from, I think it was like the late 60s. Like someone huge was really low on the bill. It's one of those kind of posters. Mm. And I was like, really? £50. My husband's a concert promoter, so I immediately ran into his room going, look, I told you, this is unacceptable.
He's like,
there are no gigs, Laura, chill out.
Yeah.
This is a moot conversation.
For now. Okay, but
we'll bring that up again next year. But yeah. What did you find to be the difference between touring with self-esteem and touring with Slow Club in terms of, I don't know, mental health or fun or being able to sort of survive?
It's hard because it's two different terms of my life, like becoming a solo artist and being able to really show what make what I want changed my mental health, like it was this kind of like, that's what's wrong, you know, like, and it's nobody's fault, it's nobody did anything wrong, it was just fundamentally like I just shouldn't have been in a band for so long, and the not being able to fully do what I want had really had a knock-on effect in my sort of personal life, but I didn't know that. So like as soon as I was sort of starting self-esteem, I was still like, I don't want to do much touring, I need this, like I was really protective of my mental health, because I couldn't go down like I did, you know, in my 20s, and we were all really on it. But then as soon as I've been touring as self-esteem and, you know, making work as self-esteem, I'm like, oh, actually, no, I can cope with a lot more, because I've figured a lot more stuff out for myself. And, you know, I've been in therapy for ages now, and just growing up, I'm older now, and everything's starting to be a little bit easier, just because I've got this kind of self-awareness and mental capacity to go hang about, you know, I get myself out of situations sooner, I put my energy into the right things most of the time these days, but that was not the case when I was in Slow Club. So it's kind of, you know, with hindsight I can see why I found it so difficult now. But I also think, and I do, and I hate to say it, but it's like being a girl, the only girl on the road for years around the world. Like, I can't believe I managed some of it, you know, I just can't. And so I don't feel, I used to feel really bad and like I'd wasted on an opportunity or something, but I'm like, nah, I just did the best I fucking could.
It took me a really long time, maybe only just till a few years ago, to properly be able to advocate for myself in situations, because I spent my teens in bands feeling like I just had to be no trouble because they had a girl in the band and that was good. I got in a band. I didn't want to get kicked out of the band for spending too long getting ready or anything like that. So just got super quick at even to the point of like being so quick going to the loo. So it wasn't like, oh, we're waiting around for her again. Know what I mean? Which is bonkers. And I was talking to Sadie Dupuis from Sad 13 and Speedy Ortiz about this kind of thing. And we were saying about how we both would make sure we carried more amps than anyone else because we wanted to be pulling our weight, to sort of go against any stupid ideas people might have about what we would be like in a band, because based on purely on gender, which is ridiculous. But anyway, it was a long time ago, so it was even worse then. So that's interesting to hear. Yeah,
it's a long time ago, but it is also like not that long ago. Like only in the last sort of 3-4 years has like feminism been in the zeitgeist enough for, certain men on tours to stop themselves before assuming like who's the drummer and things like that. It still happens, and I bring it up often as just a way to go like, it's still here, guys, we've not solved it. But also there's much more insidious and corrosive kind of inequalities that happen in the music industry as towards women than the sound guy going, where's your drummer? Is he here yet? Like, I use that as an example, but it's like, I'll take 10 of them over like the other bullshit that you get that's like,
of course,
more manipulative. And
we've all been mistaken for the merch girl. That's just a compliment, isn't it?
Is, turns out I do the merch too, so it's fine.
Well, quite. That's fine, isn't it? Yeah. I first came across you as Self-Esteem via Sophie Galpin, because I played a gig with her years ago when she was playing with Tom Williams. Her band was supporting Tom Williams in the boat and I was playing on the bill. I had heard of Slow Club, but I'd never heard it. So for me, listening to Self-Esteem and then listening to Slow Club, it's like two completely different, completely different worlds, which is so interesting. And I love that with Self-Esteem, it just does sound very much like that must be what you must be like, So I was interested to talk to you today to be like, well, I think I know her quite a lot from all of the things you put out, because there just seems to be such a wonderful lack of artifice to it. And there's so much humour and honesty and joy as well. And it's just so infectious.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask you about dancing. Mm-hmm. 'Cause you're amazing. So how long have you been dancing for? Because I am like blown away by that.
Oh, thank you. I just actually, just before, why I was late was my choreographer for the next video is like the new era, so he's just got all the new songs, so we're like screaming at each other. I just had to very quickly show him what I meant for one bit.
Oh, brilliant.
I danced, like I went to like dancing class from like 3 to 18 or whatever, but I was never that good really. Like I wanted to do musical theater and shit, obviously, but I auditioned for like drama schools and always failed on the dancing, like, because I can dance but I can't, like, technically I'm not very good. Like I think I'd be in for a couple of weeks on Strictly and be out, do you know what I mean?
Okay.
So but I love it and it gives me so much, and it sort of brought me back. In 2013 I had a very, very bad time, and I started going to this dance class and it really like genuinely like changed my shit and brought me back to my body and my center myself and stuff like that. And it was always something I really, really wanted to do in Slow Club. And like you can see, I managed to, like, there's a couple of videos where I'm dancing and I managed to like shoehorn it in, but it as soon as I could do Self-Esteem, I was like, if I could be singing and dancing every night, and it doesn't matter if I'm a huge star, really, really successful, if I'm putting on my own show in the way I want every night, then I will be not happy, but like at least on the way to being happy. And luckily, so my choreographer is, I did a between sort of Slow Club sort of winding down and Self-Esteem getting signed, I was like very skint. So I took a job as a fairy in a pantomime in Oxford. And I was a bit like, oh my god, I'll say it, I was a bit like embarrassed. But then day one I met everybody in it, and Stuart the choreographer, I was like, this is the best time of my life. And I had such a good time and I got paid.
Nice.
So it was around during the pantomime is when I got, you know, there was a single and we knew what self-esteem was going to be. And so Stuart, I was like, I'm doing this thing. And he and I just connected in such an amazing way that as soon as, you know, the job was there, you know, I want to work with him forever on all the movement, you know. And people are like, what about this, you know, this person who, you know, there's people in music video world that are the name of the moment. And I'm like, no way. Right. Like this consistency and this beauty and in this family that like I'm making. So
I think that's so beautiful that was your stepping stone between the two bands or the two acts. Was that, did you do the stuff on In My Wife yourself? Because that's beautiful as well.
Your Wife.
Your Wife. My Wife. You're my wife now. I don't know where I'm from.
Love it. that was a guy called Simon, but that was like very much the start of like, I was like, that was pre-Panto. So then post-Panto.
Oh, I see.
Yes. But yeah, it all took on. But I'm about to embark on trying to do a really hard one, sort of routine for a video. And I just want to take it all up a level.
Yeah. It sounds like that must be really fun a fun challenge, like a fun puzzle to crack, to practice that.
Yeah, it's really hard. And every time I'm like, oh, it's too hard. And then I always get there in the end. So I have plans to do a Rebecca Lucy Taylor record, which is just me laying on a piano singing ballads, and until that day I'll keep dancing. You'll know when I can't be asked anymore, because that Rebecca Lucy Taylor album will be coming out.
Just before pandemic I had two dance classes. I was gonna keep going every week to this one in Bristol, and I loved it. I've not since school done any movement at all, and I just thought, my body doesn't go that way, you know. And then the teacher did a video of us all doing whatever the little routine was, and I watched it back later, and I couldn't tell it was me. It looked like someone who knew how to move, and I felt so happy.
Yeah.
And then the fucking pandemic happened.
Yeah.
So I found myself an online course I'm going to do over Christmas. That's why I'm quizzing you about it,
because amazing.
I think it's brilliant when people do that in their own videos. I think it's great.
There's just nothing better to me still. And it you know, a lot of self-esteem is about me pleasing my damn self. So
yeah,
that's what we're doing.
Well, I'm really pleased. It's so brilliant. And I think I was refreshing my memory about all your videos the last few days before talking to you, and just the comments on them about how sort of joyous people find it and how uplifting, especially in time. Mm-hmm. I think there's something so uplifting about the group of you in the street, and it's like that juxtaposition of a really normal scenario with this beautiful expression of humanity, and it's lovely.
Thank you.
So I'm really excited about more dancing.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I just don't know how you move your body that way, but it's amazing. And the best is like ridiculously good. So, yeah.
Thank you. I'm not that good though, honestly. It's Stuart.
What?
It's like the choreographer, he just does it within what I can do and do well.
Yeah.
And I work hard at it, but you'll be as good. You will be. Don't mean
no
it.
Pressure.
You've got it in you. You've got it in you.
Well, I think we all do. I think that's why I ask about the sort of process of this stuff on this, because I really want people listening to realize if they want to try something, it's not a magical thing that only certain people can do. You just have to put some time in and some effort in and then get to a certain point. No shortcuts. It takes an awfully long time to become an overnight success. It's one of my
definitely I always find like if you've got loads of money and no time, you can achieve something, or no money but time. So
yes.
I've usually got the latter, so I devoted all my time since I could do what I wanted. Like I have just tried really hard.
I really love the Cuddles EP as well.
Thank you.
Cuddles Please. And I love to see that you were working with Gina Walters, because I don't know how we know each other online. Maybe she doesn't know me online, but I know her online. And I think Before Breakfast is one of my favourite bands of the last few years. So it's really cool to hear that.
Yeah, they're amazing.
I was just wondering, what was the impetus for you doing these alternative versions of your songs?
Well, I like it. I really like to strip a song down, because I think that's how you check a song's good. And also it's like my bread and butter, really. Like Slow Club, we used to do, you know, we did all these tours as a full band, but we would always do these Christmas shows as just the two of us, and I've still got such a soft spot for like an unmiked acoustic guitar and just singing your heart out sort of show. And so again, it's just me pleasing myself. Like I want to do a pandemic fucked it up, but basically every Christmas I want to do a tour where me and Galps go, just the two of us in tuxedos. and the plan was that so we were both in tuxedos for the first year. This year it was meant to be me in a tuxedo, Galps in a gown. Then the year after it was both in gowns. And then the year after that, we're back to tuxedos.
Okay.
I just wanted to go round and round, literally till we got old as fuck. So Cuddles, Please was just, I'd done, Gina and her choir had come and sang with us at a show and I loved it. And I was like, we need to get this on record. So yeah, it was just that. But now I guess kind of milking it dry really, but the next record I want to do like an orchestral version of, and then do, you know, do the more sedate City Hall kind of tours where I just concentrate on the singing and,
yeah,
you know, have my Adele moment.
Absolutely. I don't think it's milking it at all. I think it's an interesting, different viewpoint. And I think the listeners should check out both things and get different things from different things. But there's definitely a thing about growing up with a song as well, or like growing older with songs. So I made a collection of 8 songs, which were 2 songs off each of my 4 albums from my last project. And I made that last year. And for me, it was like I'd been touring some of those songs for 10 years and singing them again and again and again and again over that time, and not just improving. I'm not trying to reach perfection or anything, but finding different things in those songs. And so reapproaching them was fun for me from that perspective. And also there's one of them that I didn't think sounded that great on the album it was on. So I wanted to make a really good one.
There's stuff like that about it. Yeah, like vocally, you get to sort of right wrongs and stuff, and I'm trying to think why I do it, and it is just it feels just doing the album isn't enough. There's too much going on. I need to mine it,
yeah,
till it's an empty mine.
An empty husk where once songs lived.
Uh-huh.
Well, Jessica Hoop does it for, I think, for every single album. She'll do the full album version and then she does the acoustic version maybe 6 months later or something.
Great.
I don't feel milked. I feel fine with that.
Good. Okay. Thank you.
I'm happy. Yeah. You're welcome. What is success to you, and have you ever experienced it?
Oh, boy. I'm working on it. I'm working on accepting, you know, a version of success that isn't what I, like, little girl me grew up thinking about, you know? Like, I see now that I am really successful and I'm so happy and so glad and so grateful. And it's my last remaining flaw is when I, you know, sometimes I see things about other, and it's usually, like, you know, pop star girls, and I'm like, fuck. Like, it hurts, and I'm jealous, and I go, why not me? And it's just this awful version of myself that's like, buh, 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 me. And it's the worst bit about me, and I hate it, but it, you know, she still can rears her ugly head. But certainly this year, and not to be thankful for a global pandemic too much, but I've really seen, like, that I am successful, and I, you know, there's something I can go back to. There's people that will want to hear the next bit. And
yeah.
I've realized success for me is being able to create, you know, every day. And that really is enough. And I'm so thankful. Mm. And like, it's never been about money. It's more about opportunity. Like, I feel like if I was at a certain level, I'd be able to say, I want to do this now, I want to do that now. It's that I crave much more than like fame or money. It's like, how do I explain it? Like, say like this can of Coke is a really big pop star.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, can of Coke wants to do a one-woman show. And there'll be so many people that want to put can of Coke show on. Whereas sometimes I'm like, I've written this show and it's quite, you know, it'll happen, but it's going to be harder than it would be if I was kind of Coke.
Yes.
You with me?
I'm totally with you. Yeah.
It's that I get very jealous of. But same again, it's just sort of fucking say, well, tough shit. Yeah, this is your lot. And like, I'm so grateful for the audience that I have, and people who like self-esteem are hilarious, and they are the greatest gift. And yeah. I just can't wait, you know, and I hope it grows, and I hope it's bigger, and I hope I get the kind of Kirk's opportunities. But I really realize now that I'm successful, and I'm fucking proud of it.
Yeah, good. Well, you earned it. You made it all yourself, brick by brick, you know, that's the thing. If it makes you feel any better, I have exactly the same person inside me. And the latest thing she said to me was, you're never going to be able to be nominated for a Grammy because you're an independent artist. That will never happen. And then I was like, this realization, not that I think I'm going to be nominated for a Grammy or something, but I know it can't happen the way that I operate my business. I was like, oh, I never thought of that. But I never really had that on my list of things I wanted to have happen in my life. But now I know it can't. And that's really annoying. I'm pissed off by that.
It's weird. Like, it always soothes me to go, just work on what you're working on and be what you are, and whatever version of that's going to be. Because there are so many ways to be an enormous artist that aren't to do with being any good. And I just made my peace with that now. I'm like, you know, there's a world in which 10 years ago I signed as, you know, and you, it's money. If you get loads of money behind you, it's all in the marketing and things like that. Like, all of those things, all of these tricks that I could have done, it's just tough shit. We just didn't. So I've just got to rely on whatever it is I'm doing, and hopefully people respond to it. And just be, I sound high. So the saying is, just be who you are, man. But genuinely, like, and I guess it's kind of easy for me to say because I am lucky that, you know, a handful of people give a shit about what I'm going to put out next. But again, it's about bringing it back to what you want and what you need most from it. And it's, I need to be able to take whatever's in my mind into a format of expression. And that, I'm grateful and successful if I get to do that. So also, I would love to be, you know, very rich. But, you know, that's fine. I'm just going to get, I'm going to marry an old fella. I'm going to hang around the golf club.
Yeah. That's how you do it, I think.
Yeah. No, I'm reaching that point now where I'm like, you know what? Let's do that.
Seems easier than the rest of it, doesn't it? At times.
Yep. Oh, yeah. I'm down. Honestly, anyone listening, if you're over 65 and you've got loads of money, DM me, honey.
Get in touch.
Yeah. Men or women, I don't mind.
So when it comes to the internet, how do you feel about that in terms of your career? Good or bad?
I don't really think about it. Everyone asks me this, like, they're like, you're so good online. And I just think that's a really weird thing to say. And I feel, makes me feel really self-conscious and stupid. I love it. And I love it because it's a fucking laugh most of the time for me. Like, I'm really lucky. I don't get much shit yet. I don't remember a time before not having that as an outlet, that even in Slow Club, like, there's no way, you know, we would put a tour on and anyone would know about it unless I Instagrammed or tweeted it. It's just like, that's just how, and same now, like, no one in self-esteem is the only, no one goes to my website. You know, it's as simple as that. So I think some people think I've worked really hard to get this like specific brand that's really engaging, and I'm like, nah, I'm just talking shit because I think it's funny. And I'm like quite a lonely fucking person. I've never been like a majorly popular person with tons of mates. It's sad, really sad thing to say, but like, if I'm watching a TV show and I want to engage with other people about it, I love doing it with strangers on the internet. Why not? People are hilarious.
Yeah, I love it too. I really love it. And just to be able to tell people what's going on as well as just have a nice time on there, I think is what I like to use it for. In fact, I'd much prefer to just chat about whatever everyone else is chatting about than I'm doing this. Look at this. Click this thing. Please click this thing. So I really enjoy yours because you're really funny. Just really funny.
<Thank you. laughs>
It's entertaining. But I can see why people would think it's like really, oh, it's a brand. She's decided to do these particular things.
I wish it was. I wish I could switch it up. I'm this weird and stupid all the time. So I have to live with it.
So do we, apparently.
Exactly. Yeah. Sorry, guys. I'm sorry.
It's your charm.
It does. I've like personal issues have come up from shit I put on Twitter and I'm like, oh my God, don't look at that. Like, what did you go looking for it? You're gonna find someone you can decide is about you and be pissed off with. Right. Like, yeah, awful. But I refuse to stop. I will not be freedom of speech. Let me be stupid online. Of Just course. Don't go and look at it. It's very simple.
That's such a you're so vain thing, isn't it?
Oh, babes. I have so much of that shit. To deal with, but yeah, it's fine. Like I said, I shall not be stopped.
No, but it's good to hear you're not having too much shit off people, because what you're doing, I can imagine, would piss some people off. People who don't like people doing things
that do you reckon?
Want to do.
Yeah. What, being rude?
No, just like the t-shirts and stuff. I can imagine that there might be some people who are like, oh, that's so gross, talking about periods, kind of.
Yeah,
and then worse, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of people rolling their eyes at everything I do, but I just try not to think about them. And yeah, for the it's quite funny. I have a lot of male fans and I really love them. Mm. And I think it's some men find it hard to, I never want any male people to think I don't love them and want them there and stuff, like,
yeah.
And I can tell some people, you know, replying to me and stuff find it scary or whatever. I think calling me scary is really boring though, because I'm just being what most, I don't know, a lot of women are the same as me. I'm not a maverick. Like, it's just not being scared to say things that you've been, society made you think you shouldn't bring up.
Yeah.
So yeah, I often get like, I get a lot of devil's advocates who want to, you know, discuss with me my point. And I think, all right, well, let's have a look. Like I don't want to shut everyone down all the time. Yeah, I mean, I will say an overwhelming majority of the devil's advocates are men, but that's fine. And it's just a strange time, isn't it? It's like a post Me Too, not post, but like, you know, for post the first example of Me Too, post girl boss, I'm a bad bitch, Beyonce on the stereo sort of feminism. And we're all a bit like, I think people are terrified of saying the wrong thing.
Yeah.
But my point is always, you know, I'm always coming up against, they're like, you can't say anything to you. You know, you take everything as offensive as a woman. And I'm like, no, you can say anything to me, but like, make sure it's something equal, you know. Like, it's,
yeah, exactly.
So I do think I try and sort of I talk about because it's what I care about, but I think it's important to just keep lighthearted about it and keep, you know, questioning people if they want to come at you. But yeah, for the most part, I don't get much shit so far.
That's really good. I think having those conversations is really important, because it's not like women have only just realized that we've got bodily functions and are, you know, would mention them on the internet. It's that it never was acceptable before, or you never asked us before how we felt about certain things. So very occasionally, normally when we've done a Facebook ad, that's normally the only time it happens, because it's random people coming to my page and just saying whatever the fuck they like. So I got one recently, which I didn't take to heart because I don't care, but I find it funny and I use it as an example, which is just simply tattooed slut.
Thank you.
Well, quite.
What a compliment.
I know. But that's a person who doesn't like that I am doing what I want in the world. It's not about me being a slut, whether or not that is bad or good or whatever. That's just a reaction to, there's a woman in my Facebook feed who's doing what she likes, and I really don't like that. It wasn't, I hate your music or you look crap or anything like that. It was just, your existence pisses me off.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and
gotcha.
There are a lot of people like that. And I just imagine they might be inflamed by a t-shirt that says, I want to be fucked on my period too, or whatever it was. You know?
I'm sure they were, but no one dares say it. And I've had plenty of like comments about what I look like. My favorite ever comment was, I was in the, I think it was the Sunday Times, quite a lot of pictures of me at Glastonbury, and it was all about like, and it was a big deal, you know, most big pressing I've ever had. And some guy commented, this used to be a rock festival for Pete's sake. And they were just, they were really pissed off that like a girl in a dress who makes pop music was being, you know, their Glastonbury coverage was around me. Absolutely amazing. I think about it most days. I want to get that on a t-shirt. It's so great. But this is the thing, like, if you, a lot of people just don't on the internet, and sometimes I want to go, have you read like anything lately? Like men who want to have a problem with like what I'm talking about. Like, I'm like, it's just not in vogue, darling, anymore to have a problem with me talking about periods. Like, you're not cool. Sauce. Yeah.
It's not for a moment that I think you're doing any of this for positive comments from strangers, but as an artist myself, I know that the shitty things are the things you remember. Like, I remember Tattooed Slut, even though it didn't upset me. But I don't remember the beautiful things people say about songs that change their life and things. I know, I appreciate those. Of course they do. And I always reply and I am polite. And I think that's lovely that they had that experience. You know, my ego doesn't particularly get boosted by that. I'd probably explain to them how shit I think I am most days if I hadn't learned to just say thank you. Do you know what I mean?
Which
But still, the shitty things stick a bit more.
Oh God, yeah.
So I was just wondering how you deal with that, because you have a lot more fans than I do, and I still have the shitty comments still stick.
Yeah, no, they still smart. I'm really good at not looking really, like, I've never looked on YouTube or anything these days. I think I used to find it a lot harder in Slow Club, like, because I didn't, if someone had anything negative to say about that, potentially it might be something that I'm like, yeah, I'm not happy with that either, or no, I didn't mean that anyway. Like, because self-esteem is so fully what I want to do, I'm a little bit like, there's an armor, because I'm like, well, there's nothing I could have changed, so your criticism is redundant, because I wouldn't have done it differently had I had my time again. So that, plus just a general amount of like, something we used to say in Slow Club actually was, and it was a guy from a band called the Heebie Jeebies in Sheffield once. They were supporting us, and on stage he went, they're just songs, aren't they? It's just songs. And it's so brilliant, because every time I'm getting like bogged down or upset or like big existential things about what I'm doing, I'm like, they're just songs. And not only are they just songs, they're songs with dance routines, which is even more ridiculous. So I'm like, do you know what, just get a bit of perspective, you know. But it still hurts.
Yeah,
I get angry, and I want to go, well, back at them. But I, you know, you try not to. And I'll say it again, like, I could have so much more bullshit than I get, and I'm often surprised I don't get trolled more than I do. I'm just grateful. Yeah, I mean, there's total arguments for like, are you doing it right if people don't hate it, or some people don't hate it, you know, like that's definitely something that crosses my mind. But I have to always return to this, like, do what I think truly in my gut thing. Nothing's an experiment really in self-esteem. It's like, I do what I just, no matter how long I think about it, I come back to this and I want to do this. So yeah, like I said, it's sort of a safe kind of place to come out of, as safe as you can be when you're like being really open on things. But yeah, I've got a confidence in what I do now that I never used to have. So when you're sure of something, it's harder to a comment to fuck you up.
Yeah. Because I think people need to accept as well that not everything is for them. So you might not like something, but it doesn't mean it's shit or wrong. It just means it's not your thing. That's fine.
Exactly. Just reply, it's just songs.
It's just songs.
Just click on somewhere else, hon.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I like that very much. What are you most proud of creating so far?
Oh, the badges. Badges were a runaway success. I think I'm really proud of like doing it at all. Like I thought that what I wanted to do alone was there was a time I wouldn't have ever dared, and I still felt very frightened and very scared and sure I couldn't, and but it became like a dam that just got too full and it had to just explode. Like there's no way around it really. So I'm just really proud that I took the leap and did it, and whether it had been successful or not, like I had to. That's what I'm proudest of.
Yeah.
I think. And the t-shirts, you know.
Obviously.
The t-shirts are so good.
They are. And how about the transition from Slow Club to Self-Esteem? Have you brought audience members with you? Because they're so different musically.
Yeah. At first I thought, God, there's going to be like loads of people going like, this is shit, I hate you, bring back When I Go, you know. That's like the most folky Slow Club song.
Okay.
But I didn't get any of that. No one gave me a hard time. I think people, if you liked Slow Club and you don't like this, no one's told me. But I think that's to do with the sort of fans Slow Club have, which are like just nice people who aren't, you know, it's not laddie, it's not, it's just, you know, music that anyone could enjoy, I think. And so I haven't got much grief. I think more Slow Club fans than I realise have come along. But I did used to look out at a Slow Club gig and I couldn't see any queer people. I couldn't see any like people that sort of felt like me. And now I look out there and it's just this sea of like chaotic fabulousness. And I'm like, okay, here we are. Like it's the best. It's the best thing to come out of it is the shows and the sort of people that that like it. And same with like all this, I've been doing streamed exercise every day in lockdown and done all this other stuff where I'm really like interacting with just anybody who wants to. And even that, like there's about seven people that do the exercise still every day with me. And I'm like, you're my like mates now. Like, and they were Self-Esteem fans. Like it's brilliant. I love it. And it's made me feel less alone and less like a loser. It's like so nice.
Well, that's when you're doing something that's so true to you, I think it's only ever going to attract the kinds of people you would want to spend time with. That's how it should be.
Yeah, like you say it like that, I'm like, oh, of course. But it's not that like Slow Club fans didn't like them, but like I felt like I wasn't as at home as I feel now.
Yeah, and who knows? It's very likely that lots of Slow Club fans have come with you. Because I was asking because I think people fall in love with certain people in the bands they love, and they would then follow them onto something else, even if it's a massive genre shift, which I feel like it is when I listen to the two things. But if I had been listening to Slow Club for 10, 15 years or whatever, then maybe I wouldn't find it to be so strange, because I would have got to know you in certain ways through videos and shows.
Yeah,
and I don't know.
There's moments on the second Slow Club album that you can hear what I'm getting at now in Self-Esteem, I think. And if I think back to that time, it was like second album, I was like, here we go, right, this is how we make our mark. And I used to have a lot more fight in me then to like really sonically get my point across. Then you know, we toured and it became, I still love what we made, but I learned what worked and what was a good compromise and how to do it. So the genre thing is, yeah, it Self-Esteem is wildly different, but I was, you can hear what me as a musician back then, I think, down there. And I don't know, I've got so many like lovely like dads in their 50s and over that love Self-Esteem, and I'm like, what are you connecting with here? And they love it, and I love them, and I think it's a human thing all around to just say how you feel and say you might not find it very easy sometimes. And I think that's, you know, for a Slow Club fan who has listened for 10 years, and I was always saying this sort of shit in that. It's just a different, in a different packaging.
Yeah, with amazing dancing and cool t-shirts and badges, for fuck's sake.
What's not to like? I don't know. There's nothing not to like.
So which three pieces of your work would you recommend if someone's listening and hasn't heard you before?
I think In Time is a really good, the video and song. Mm. There is a video and a song called In Waves. Obviously, just same old shit. It's this local song that I'm really proud of. And I thought about it the other day because someone referenced it at something else. And I watched the video and I was like, oh, wow, this is like, this is the start of self-esteem as well. You can see what I'm getting at. So I would say that video. And I think Favourite Problem on the Cuddles Please EP is a really good sort of version of that song. And vocally, I think I'm pretty proud of that.
Speaking of vocals, I absolutely love it when people sing in their accents, because especially as British people, I think there's a lot of people who sing in American accents. I'm just not keen. It's not for me. So I love that you do that. Is that something you've always done? Did you have to think about it and make sure you did it, or do you not notice, or something else?
I think I've never thought about it too much, really. If I've ever done something and I feel embarrassed, like, that's usually tells me that it's not right, you know? Like, yeah. I think, like, back in the early days of Slow Club, we were, like, really inspired by Bright Eyes and Tilly and the Wall and stuff, so... And it was a real Americana sort of sound. So I probably back then, I mean, it's such a long time ago now, but I probably made a point of making sure we didn't have American accents back then, which a lot of people do. But I don't know. I definitely don't, like, ham it up or anything. I just do what feels comfortable and right. Sometimes in Johan, my producer, is Swedish, so he's sometimes like, what are you saying? I cannot understand my accent. And I'm like, we can't. Like, pronunciation sometimes is a problem because of my accent. But, yeah, I will never... It's such a weird thing in UK big pop acts to do this, like... Oh, let me think what the word is. Do you know what I mean? They like, sing, like...
Do you mean hot potato voice?
Like, what?
Ho, 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 ho.
Yeah, like, oh, well, ho, yo, and the no. You know, like, yeah, it's like, ho.
Do you mean, like, fake sort of gravelly? Trying to be
no, gradual. I need to, sorry, just cut this out. It's something, it's this like hand like it's not British and it's not American, it's just this it's weird, like,
right?
And I hate that. I hate it so much. I think I like to hear people's accents in other music that I listen to. So maybe there's a bit of me that's like making sure that it's there, but not too consciously anyway.
Okay. I just really respond to that because it feels like another layer of artifice has been lifted if someone's not pretending to be a slick American singer when they're from wherever.
Yeah.
There's that brilliant Arctic Monkeys line about Rotherham, isn't there? You're not from, well, you're not from New York City, you're from Rotherham. Yeah. My favourite so lyrics good. Ever. Love it. Love that band.
So, so, so good. I'm in such a Monkeys era. I can't get enough. It's quite embarrassing because I know a couple of guys that are really tight with them, and I'm like, and I've never actually met an Arctic Monkey, even though I'm from Sheffield.
Yeah,
it's getting embarrassing though. Like, if I ever met one, I'd be like, oh God, I don't. I would die. I would die. I'm their biggest.
Would you like to? Would you like to collaborate with Alex Turner?
Oh my God, I would die. I would drop dead. I would drop dead. I am not only is he the best, like, musically, he's an absolute idol. I am so attracted to him. It's unbearable. I would just drool, and it would be terrible. But you know, if I got enough like diazepam, maybe I could collaborate with him. But until then,
I bet
then,
you can make that happen though.
Oh,
not the diazepam. I'm sure you could do that as well. But
I hate it when I come like fly close to the sun with like celebrities. I'm like, I don't want it. No, I don't want you to like, no. Like, I just want him to never know I exist and I can just happily be his fan forever. Because if someone was like, oh, Alex has heard your record, I'd be like, what? Be like, don't tell me that. So yeah. But you know, if
boundaries.
He's listening, I can, yeah. Yeah, just if you're listening, Alex Turner, just forget I exist, please. Just keep.
If you're listening, Alex Turner, holy shit, I'm impressed. Wow, I love you too. I'm a little bit cooler about it than her.
yeah, it's painful. Painful being me.
Who else have you been listening to lately then in your childhood bedroom?
I know. No, just the Monkees, really. I'm pretty bad with new music because I get like weird and jealous. Let me just look at my playing. I really love so there's this Willow Smith song that's amazing called Meet Me at Our Spot. I can't stop listening to that song. I think it's wonderful. She's legit, like really legit. I feel sorry for her because I bet no one would take it her very seriously on account of her being like a very famous child. But she makes really beautiful music.
Great. Well, I'm going to listen. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take it very seriously.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's all my questions. Do you have any questions for me or any statements you'd like to make at the end of this podcast episode?
No, I think I've said more than enough.
When can we look forward to your album being out?
It's spring next year. So, but there should be some things coming out sort of early next year.
Awesome. Well, let's do a public sign off then. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
For more on Rebecca and her work, come and visit the show page at penfriend.rocks/RLT. Thank you again for listening today. If you enjoyed this episode, please do me a massive favour and share it with a friend. And feel free to say hi on Twitter, Instagram or Facebook. I'm at penfriendrocks everywhere. If you'd like to check out my correspondence club, come and visit penfriend.rocks and you can get 2 free songs immediately when you sign up for a free or a paid tier. I make this podcast and the music in it myself, and the song you're listening to right now is my new single Exotic Monsters, the one with the very strange upcoming video. It's available wherever you get your music, and yes, it's even on TikTok if Rebecca's also inspired you to make up a dance. But the best way to support this independent artist directly is to come to my website to find out more. I'll be back next Wednesday with another deep conversation about creativity, grit, and determination. So I hope to catch you then. Take care. Keep a kiss for me, 'cause we all fall down under.